Mount Moriah. For a location, it's where Jerusalem now stands. But for the time being, there was no Jerusalem, and it was just a mountaintop. And the story begins with a man, his wife, and son. And the son and the father and the wife all live about 3 days' journey from this mountaintop. You know these three people probably: Abraham, wife Sarah, and son Isaac. Also, you probably know the story connected with Mount Moriah. If you do know, you remember that it's the most extraordinary story in the Bible in the sense of God giving somebody a command to obey. It's the most extraordinary command that you can find in the Bible. None like it, and it's so difficult to understand, to imagine, that many say it just cannot be true. God would never give this kind of command to anybody. Not the God that we know, not the God of the Bible. Something has to be wrong in this story. Genesis chapter 22, verse 1 and 2. And it came to pass that God tested Abraham and said to Abraham, take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah. And there you offer your son for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I will show you. Now you can understand why I said that is one unusual command. When God first called Abraham to follow him, he promised Abraham and Sarah, who had no children at that time, that they would have heirs, that is, that they would have children, and through their seed, their descendants, their children, would eventually come the Messiah. Thus, this first son of theirs would be a son of great promise. The years came and the years passed, and there was no son. 25 years passed now, and Abraham is 100 years old, and his wife is 90. Still no fulfillment of the promise. And so God comes to Abraham in his tent, and he says, it's now time for you to have that promised child. Sarah and Abraham reason among themselves, this can't happen because we are past child-bearing and child-producing age. But God said, this will be a miracle child. And so Isaac was born. The name was given to him by God. The name means laughter. Thus you can understand that Isaac was a source of laughter, joy, and rejoicing for his daddy Abraham and his mother Sarah. And even God takes note that Abraham truly did love his son Isaac. Now after waiting 100 years to get a son, how easy would it be for Abraham to obey this command, to take his son and lay him upon an altar, place wood upon him, kill him, and set the wood on fire as a burnt offering to God, to please God, satisfy God, to gain God's mercy? How do you think Abraham took that command? Now, one book I read held the opinion that the whole idea is absurd, that Abraham dreamed this thing up. It would not come from God. It was not inspired revelation from heaven, but it was just something that was in the mind of Abraham he thought might be a good idea. And the story is too absurd to take seriously. Human sacrifice now was common among the neighbors of Abraham, that is, the Canaanite people. And so it was not unusual for Abraham to hear about or maybe even see some family sacrifice their child or someone in their family to the god Moloch of the Canaanite Empire. But Abraham also knew that whenever a child was sacrificed, that child was gone. You did not get that child back. And so would Abraham consider giving up Isaac? Now, it does not appear that this idea came to Abraham in any dream. He seems to be wide awake. It's not the suggestion of his wife or anyone else. I do not think it's even the suggestion of an evil spirit. I believe Abraham thus far had already on many occasions talked to God enough that he could recognize God's voice. I don't believe Satan can imitate God's voice, if you ever hear it. I really don't. And so Abraham, that's the voice of God. I mean, I have heard it in the past. That's the voice of God. It's not some wild idea that Abraham dreamed up. For had he dreamed it up, I think he would have quickly rejected any such notion and his eyes mine, but he said, that's the voice of God, and God has given me a command. Now, it's Abraham's absolute assurance that this is what God requires of him that makes this such a difficult story. If we say, well, Abraham was mistaken, then that clears God, doesn't it? But, I mean, this doesn't sound like Abraham is mistaken. Well, then if that's the case, what's the purpose of this strange command? Some say, well, it was to test the faith and faithfulness of Abraham. Now, it would do that, no doubt about it. But I don't think that's the main purpose behind this unusual command, which God never gave anybody else. I think the object of the trial was to teach Abraham a great truth about God that was difficult to teach without some kind of picture, some kind of symbol, some kind of object to explain it. Genesis 22:14, I believe Abraham understands this truth and why it's going to be asked of God. Verse 14, and Abraham, after the experience is all over now, called the name of the place on Mount Moriah, Jehovah Jireh. Gives God a special name, Jehovah Jireh. The name means the God who would provide. Now that's what Abraham learned out of this trial, and that's what God wanted Abraham to learn. And God had a strange way of teaching this, but it's a very important lesson that you and I need to learn, that God would provide. The question is, God would provide what? We say, well, God will provide your needs and your protection and your blessings and your health. But what is it he's saying to Abraham? I will provide. And let's be sure we put in the blank after that the correct answer. Let's pick up the story where we left off. Verse 3. And Abraham rose up early in the morning, the day after the request, saddled his donkey and took two young men with him and his son Isaac and the wood for the burnt offering and rose up and went to the place where God had told him. Now the response of Abraham is to me nothing but a miracle. He's calling out to make the greatest sacrifice you could possibly make, a son being sacrificed by a father who loved him, who waited 100 years to get him. But there's no indication Abraham hesitates. He gets up early in the morning, no delay. He doesn't question God's love or wisdom or command in the Scriptures. There's no resistance. There's no argument. There's no putting the thing off till some other day. He begins immediately. Now, it indicates that God will show him where to go, somewhere on the mountain range of Moriah. And it would be a 3-day journey. Can't help but wonder as Abraham walked those 3 days beside his son Isaac, saw the wood, and felt the knife, I guess, beside his side that would be used to slay the son. And think of all the good times he and his son had together, and think of the future they could have together, and here they walked 3 days' journey. I wonder what was on the mind of Abraham as he looked at his son. He just had 3 days, and then 2 days, and then 1 day to be the son. Now, Isaac was no longer a little child. He was, they estimate, about 25 years old, and Abraham would be now 125. But Isaac didn't know that he was the victim. Verse 4, on the third day, now we're getting awful close to the ordeal. On the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes, and there's the place. There's the place. Just a few more yards. My son's gone. Would you have second thoughts now, folks, if you were Abraham? Huh? Would you kind of start hesitating, drawing back if this just a few more yards now? I mean, 65, 75, 100 feet, 200 feet? I mean, that's not far. Boy, the time is ticking away here. And Abraham said to the young men who went with them, you stay here, and I and my son will go up there and we'll worship and come back again to you. How Abraham believed he was going to get Isaac back down to meet with those two men, I don't know, unless he believed in the resurrection, and that he did. And Abraham took the wood. Now, follow this. He takes the wood, I guess it had been carried by the donkey. I don't know, but I assume that. He takes the wood for the burnt offering off of the donkey, and he puts it on the back of his son Isaac. And then he takes a fire on a stick in his own hand, which is going to be used to light the wood for the burnt offering. He's got a knife in one hand and a stick of fire in the other hand, and looking at his son with the wood on his back beside him, and up the mountain they go. And on the way up, Isaac said to Abraham, his dad, "Father, I don't know whether you noticed or not, but we're missing something." And his father said, "What's that, son?" "Well, we got wood and we got fire for the wood, but we don't have any lamb for the burnt offering. You don't have anything to put on the offering." And Abraham said, "My son," now here's where you get that Jehovah Jireh, "my son, God will provide." What? Himself, not them. God will provide something for himself, not something for me, something for himself. God will provide himself a lamb for the burnt offering. And the boy said, "Oh, okay. When we get there, I guess God will produce the lamb we're going to use." "That's right, son." "Fine." And they continued on up the mountain. And so the time arrived, and they were standing there before the altar on top of Mount Moriah, but there was no lamb at the time. And so Isaac now learns that he is the sacrifice. Remember, he's 25 and Abraham's 125. You know, if Isaac wanted to, I believe he had enough strength to overpower his older dad. But there's no indication he resisted. Undoubtedly, he climbed up on that rock altar. His dad bound his hands and his feet, and he consents to become the sacrifice that God required, because now I would assume Abraham explained to him what God commanded: go up and sacrifice your son. Can you feature the son being willing to be sacrificed? And so the time came for Abraham to raise the knife to slay his son and then set fire to the wood. Verse 9. They came to the place that God had told him of, and Abraham built an altar there, laid the wood on the altar, in order, and then bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched forth his hand and took the knife to slay his son. And the angel of the Lord called out to him from heaven and said, "Abraham, Abraham, stop. Lay not your hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him. For now I know that thou fearest God, seeing that you have not withheld your son, your only son." And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram was caught in a thicket or a bush by the horns. And Abraham went and took the ram, took Isaac off the altar and put the ram on the altar and offered the ram instead of his son. Now, I don't believe that God, by this testing of Abraham, intends to promote sacrifices of humans by humans to gain God's mercy and favor. At first, it seems like that's what's being taught. But before the story ends, God's view on this matter of humans sacrificing humans is made absolutely clear. Stop. Lay not your hand on the lad. Human sacrifices of humans is forbidden. Now that's the final word in this story. It may sound like he was going to have it okay, but in the end, no sacrifice of humans by humans is allowed. Later, when God gives the Ten Commandments and other commandments at Mount Sinai, this becomes one of the commandments. You shall never sacrifice a human to any god, including himself. Now, God did not change his mind at the last second. He never intended for Isaac to be slain from the very beginning. He would have never allowed it. But God, again, wanted to teach Abraham and Isaac and us too, as vividly as he could, a shocking truth. With just a few changes, this story would one day be fully played out. God was intending to make a statement, a revelation, and open the eyes of Abraham that there would be a repeat one day of this event. John 8:56, Jesus said, "Your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day." When did Abraham see Jesus? All right. And he says here, he saw it and he was glad. He saw it on Mount Moriah. Galatians 3:8. And the scripture, foreseeing that God would justify the heathen through faith, preached the gospel unto Abraham. Now, the central theme, folks, of the gospel is the crucifixion of Christ. The gospel, Jesus says, was preached to Abraham. And Jesus said, Abraham saw me. And so what you have in this story is the object lesson story that God preached to Abraham and Isaac. And it's a story that you can't overlook. I mean, it's a story that you can't ignore. It's a story that is outstanding. Now, you know God's justice demands death for the sinner. You know that. And God's mercy desires to spare the sinner from that very death. And so God's mercy has come up with a remedy. How he can save the sinner from death he is due. If you can find a substitute to take the place of the sinner, one who himself does not deserve to die because of sin, then God will accept the death of the substitute. And so in this story, we see God taking the initiative to provide the substitute. It's not Isaac, but it is a human substitute. It wouldn't be the son of Abraham, but it would be the Son of God, who would have to come down to earth and take on human form. The altar on Mount Moriah points forward to Mount Calvary, the cross. Jesus would one day actually die on Mount Moriah. They're one in the same place. And he would die at the hands of his own father. Jesus is represented here in the story two ways. By the ram caught in the bush, he becomes the ram that's sacrificed. Isaac gets off the altar. Jesus does not. Jesus is called the Lamb of God. And so therefore, this lamb, Jesus, does not get freed. So the ram represents Christ. And up until that point, Isaac represented Christ. Now, only a human sacrifice can substitute for a human sinner. An animal cannot substitute for a human. Therefore, where is God going to get him a suitable sacrifice? A human sacrifice is impossible because all humans through Adam have sinned and therefore deserve to die. You've got to get an animal, a sacrifice that is sinless, that does not deserve to die himself. And so God says, I will provide myself. I'll take care of getting the person. I'll provide myself with a sacrifice. Now what you see in this picture here is something you probably never thought about. You don't see much about Christ in this story. You see a lot about the Father. How did the Father take the crucifixion? How did God the Father's heart reveal or experience this event? This is the side of Calvary we don't see in the New Testament. I think we have to look at this story to find the heart of the Father in this ordeal. Do you think it was easy for God the Father to crucify his son? Do you? Now, it wasn't easy for Abraham. It surely wouldn't be easy for me. But do you think it was easy for God the Father? That he had no feelings, had no heart, had no compassion for his son? And he says, parallel, does not God love his son? You can't love your son more than God loved his son. I mean, God's love for his son is unlimited. Abraham had to endure the agony of feeling the knife at his side and looking through wood for 3 days and then seeing the son carry the wood and then go with the son to the top of the altar. I mean, Abraham had experienced all this in his heart. But God, not just 3 days, and not even just 3 years, not even 3,000 years, but from the foundation of the world, God the Father had to put this on his mind, that one day he'd walk up that mount with his son, and that he would crucify his son. 1 Peter 1:19, but with the precious blood of Christ, as of a lamb without blemish and without spot, who was foreordained to die before the foundation of the world. The son was marked out for sacrifice from all eternity. The cross was according to God's foreknowledge. It was God's plan. It was Jesus' statement, I have come to do the will of my Father. And what was that? To let the Father crucify him on Calvary. You know the togetherness of Abraham and Isaac. They walked together. You remember the last days of Christ? The Father and the Son walk into a garden. It's called the Garden of Gethsemane. And the Father's mind is on Calvary. And the Son's mind is on Calvary. This Isaac knows about his death. The other Isaac did not. this Isaac Jesus does. And he talks to his dad. He says, Dad, and he says, and I believe if you could see the face of the father, there was tears. And he said, Dad, is there any way? Is there any way to take this cup from me? Do I have to die like this? Is there no other way, Father? But if there isn't, all right. Can you see the heart as the son pleads with his dad? Don't crucify me. Oh, can you picture this, people? Can you picture the heart of the father as he looks at his son? And his son pleads with him three times. God, Father, do you have to do this? Is there no other way? Then later the father puts the wood on the back of Jesus. And Jesus walks up that and the father walks beside him. Can you picture? Have you ever pictured the father walking beside Jesus carrying the old wooden cross? Can you picture the face? Can you picture the feeling, the emotionalism of the father? Then there came that moment the father had to take the knife, the Roman nails, had to take the fire, the judgments, the wrath of God upon sin, the hellfire aspect of judgment, and he had to put it on his son. Jehovah Jireh, God will provide himself a sacrifice. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. He sacrificed him. Whoever believes in him would not perish but have everlasting life. Of course, the son comes back to life. But that doesn't remove the pain and the agony of the father as he looked at. As I thought about this, people, I said, as I began to visualize this in my mind, I said to God, don't do it. Don't do it. Stop. As God said to Isaac, stop. Don't kill your son. I'm not worth it. Don't do that. But God wouldn't listen to me. And because of that, his son is bringing him a new laughter. The laughter comes from all the souls that are being saved that the Father gains.